You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
Welcome. What's up, theater geeks?
What is up?
This is going to be a super fun series, like nothing we've ever done before.
A very far departure.
Yeah. Well, sort of, though, because I feel like I made a pretty good case for this.
You did. But I will also say it is still a far departure from what we usually do, because what we usually do is written material that was done for a very short amount of time on a Broadway stage or on a stage. Yeah. And this is different. So tell us, because I was very intrigued and excited when you asked me if this is something that we should do. So please explain what we are doing today, Miss Ebony.
So we have started on the rewatching of the television show Smash Journey. Super excited about it. So it's funny because right before our call, you know, because you usually come to the arts prayer calls that I do. But we for the Smash rewatch, we're rewatching with friends. And then after we rewatch with friends, we're talking about it. So I had an arts prayer call before, and I was telling everybody I'm late for the Smash rewatch. And none of them actually knew what the show was.
Oh, really? No, wait.
Yes.
You mean on the arts prayer?
On the arts call.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
The two we watched it with, they knew. They knew.
Like, wait a minute. Yeah.
Yeah, but on the prayer call, they didn't.
Yeah,
so I was like, well, we're really in our niche here where it's like not everybody knows. I mean, in these, the friends that we pray with, I mean, they're like, two of them are like working on Broadway.
Yeah.
You know, and then the other one's in he's in a conservatory master's program for acting. And then my other friend, she's in a company at her local theater. Like, so, and she's been doing theater her whole life, like went to school for it. So it was just really interesting, like, to tell them about it. And they were super excited, you know, when I explained it, but none of them had ever heard about it. So it's like right within our wheelhouse of like letting people know about things that are cool that nobody really, you know, not everybody knows about.
Well, if you recall, when Glee first hit the air, it was very under the radar.
Right.
It was theater kids and that was it. Those were the people that were watching Glee. But then it got really like this momentum going.
Yeah.
And then they started singing more popular stuff and like, and all of that stuff was added into it. And then it was like this really popular thing that happened. So that was kind of exciting. Smash is even more niche than that.
Super niche.
Because it is all about the Broadway world, putting it like writing a show, getting cast or casting the show and doing all of the behind the scenes stuff and then doing the actual performance. So unless you have a real interest in that, it doesn't really draw your interest at all.
Right. And then even for some people who, you know, like I said, all the people on the call were like, Wait, what? And then when I would give them, they knew the names of the people that I said were in it, and they were just shocked they had never heard of it before.
Oh, I know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And also, I will say, because I was working at the time that this was, like, on the actual TV, mm-hmm. and I had mentioned to you, I watched maybe the first 4 episodes, and I just really, I couldn't quite get into it, and I think that was simply because of the timing of it.
Yeah. Because you were on tour.
Right, exactly. But when we watched that first episode again, I was like, okay, I see this. I like this. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And also, we'll talk about a lot of this stuff later on. I've got notes. It's very exciting. But, like, a lot of the stuff that I was seeing struck me in such a different way than it did when I watched it, what was, like, 6 years ago?
Yeah, two. Well, it's
no.
So it started 2011, but it was canceled 2000. No, I'm lying. Wait.
2012, I thought, right?
No, I'm sorry. It did get canceled 2013. So you're right. It started fall. I think it was actually, it started fall 2011.
Okay.
Right. So that the first season ended May 2012 and then fall 2012 to summer 2013
was
when it finally ended. So that's how.
So nine years ago.
Yeah. Is when it first started.
Crazy. I mean, that's also a little bit crazy because I don't know if you knew this, Ebony, but it's my birthday today. So
it is.
So I'm just feeling a little old.
I suck as a friend. Bad with calendar. Oh, God.
It's okay.
I'm so good with calendars, except when it comes to birthdays. I don't know what the hell.
I have, and it's so funny because I never thought I'd be this person, but I have to in my phone have all of my nieces and nephews' birthdays in the calendar. Otherwise, I forget. Because I remember some of them, like the early ones, I'm like, it's in there. It's in there forever. But like the later ones, I'm like, I don't know. And 2 of them share a birthday. So that one shouldn't be difficult, but I cannot remember. Yep.
Well, happy birthday. I hope this is a fun. Did you work today?
I did not. I have Sundays off now. Yes.
Yo, you do.
You. So
it's
my
so
new
sad because we could go apple picking, but we can't because COVID.
No.
I'm telling you, apple picking with you and Christmas are like my favorite.
Thank you. I will take that as a huge compliment because I love going apple picking with you too. It is, it is one of those things that's on the calendar. Like there are really only a few things that I have on my calendar that there is no question I'm going. My beach vacation in May, which I had to miss this year, apple picking with you, and then the holidays at home, whatever the holidays may be. It's usually January. Yeah. But like those 3 things, those are like super important to me. I don't know though, because I feel like because it's such an open air area, I think that you and I should still be able to go. They might just keep the numbers down.
Right.
So which would even be better.
Yeah.
That
just means like next month we have to like check in and see what their protocols are.
Right. Yeah.
But I should.
We don't usually go until the beginning week of
October.
Like the first week of October. So yeah.
Yeah. But next month is September.
I know. This is nuts. This week. And my birthday, it surprised me. So no shame for you. It crept up. Like last week I was looking at the calendar and like figuring out what my schedule was and like how many dogs I had. And I went, oh my gosh, next week is my birthday. It was like, it took me by surprise because this whole year since March basically has taken forever and also taken no time at all. It is the weirdest feeling.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
So weird.
Yeah. I was talking to my brother on Friday, who informed me Hamilton's his favorite musical of all time, which brought great joy to this big sister's heart. But also he was like, and my youngest niece, she'll be 3 months. 3 months.
Wow.
This month.
Yeah.
And I was like, crap. Like usually over the summer, I will have seen her by this point. I will have met her by this point. I was like, I've usually seen the kids three times by this point.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's not the same by any means, because it wasn't a quarantine that kept us apart or a virus that was, you know, killing hundreds of thousands of people, millions really globally, if you think of that in that spectrum. Yeah. But remember when my nephew Dean was born and my sister kept him from us at the holidays? Because were a thing. Like, they had just been introduced to the United States again because these anti-vaxxers are idiots. And so she wasn't going to bring him to see us because of this heightened risk. And he wasn't old enough to get the MMR vaccine yet. And so it was just so frustrating, because then by the time we saw him, he didn't know who we were. We all loved him and like went to go reach for him and grab him and give him lots of love and kisses. And he was like scared out of his mind, because he was like, I don't know. Like, it was super clingy to my sister. And we were all so mad at her, because all she had to do was bring him to that Christmas and he would have been fine. But yeah, it's slightly the same, but not really the same. Yeah. But yeah, I'm sorry.
I know. I don't, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I felt like when Joy was little and when she was first born, I lived in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And so the time I'd visited her when she was only a few months old and got christened, I held her for something like 8 or 9 hours, but she was sleeping the whole time I held her, right? No, it was like five. I held her for at least 5 hours. I really did, nonstop, but she was sleeping. So the next time she saw me, she's like, who's this person? Yeah. And then it took her a while to be like, I mean, we'll see if I like you. There was like a while of that kind of like little kid look. And then around like, not yet two, she was about a year and a half, she warmed up.
Yeah.
And we were fine. But like, listen, kid.
Yeah.
You slept on me for 5 hours. She was I don't recall.
You listen here. We are blood. We are blood related. Get over here and give your auntie a kiss.
She's like, I don't recall any of this. I don't know who you are. Yes. You didn't say, Joyous, can I please hold you for 5 hours?
Yeah. Oh, kids.
I know. She's my little buddy now. We're fine now.
But I love that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You've got a great little relationship with her.
Yeah. She's great.
Awesome.
So back to the show, because hopefully one day I can show it to her, but it won't be until she's like 22, because
I know. It took me by surprise how overtly sexual everything was in this show. And I feel like I'm talking like an old lady by saying that, but it really is remarkable. I think only because it feels like it was such a long time ago, and we just didn't show that kind of stuff so long ago. But like this, so I'm just going to skip ahead if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead. We can jump all over.
Okay,
so people know, this is the pilot episode of Smash. It's on NBC.com for free. Mm-hmm. You download the NBC app. You can watch both seasons for free. And that's what we're doing. And we're going to take you through both seasons.
So I'm going to skip to the middle of the episode. Okay. And they're spoiler alerts. We're not going to hold back. So if you don't want to listen to the spoilers, stop right now and go watch that episode. And then you can come back and listen to us. And this is going to be very, very much like the podcast, How Did This Get Made? Have you ever listened
to that? I love that podcast.
It
so
is one
deeply.
Of my favorites. Jason Mantzoukas forever.
I love him. He's the weird, he's like this weird combination of like really, like just soft-hearted and super sensitive, but like extremely dirty. Like
he's the kind of man I want to marry. Not the dirty part, but like his sense of humor he just makes me guffaw. And I will hoard those episodes for long car drives, because I love it so much. But I will be in my car all by myself laughing out loud. I just love it.
He also loves Maisel.
Yes.
So there's a podcast called Maisel Goys. And because he's a huge Amy Sherman Palladino fan, he's on like a couple episodes of Maisel Goys talking about Maisel.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, such a weird combination of like sensitive. He'll cry at the drop of a hat on how did this get made. He wants to like hold babies all the time.
Give me that baby.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. But so I'm going to be very much like Jason Mantzoukas, I'm sure, in these episodes. But anyway, so skipping ahead to like the middle of the episode. So essentially, just in a nutshell, I know that you guys have already watched it, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. But for the people that decided not to listen to my advice just a second ago, the beginning episode, we see basically the workings of a show coming into fruition. Mm-hmm. So we meet the writers, and they get an idea by seeing a coffee table book about Marilyn Monroe. And they think, oh, we should write a musical about Marilyn. There's so much about her. And, you know, one of the main themes was, oh, she married Joe DiMaggio. We could write a baseball number.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of this show, they have kind of put together some of the songs. And now they're wanting to see it on its feet, just this one baseball number on its feet, to kind of audition a director. Mm-hmm. Who's going to choreograph and direct this one little scene. And this song, this is the one that was so overtly sexual to me.
It really was.
The dancing they were doing and the gyrating they were doing together was like, I almost was like, this wouldn't be on Broadway. Like, they don't do this kind of stuff on Broadway.
I don't know, though.
I mean, I guess anymore.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man.
I had seen... I had seen the concert.
Okay.
That they did a Smash concert a couple of years ago and recorded it, but then they put it on YouTube as a fundraiser for Broadway Cares.
Okay, yeah.
And so I had forgotten about that song, and I mean, honestly, I knew a bunch of the songs like in my head, but like the numbers I didn't remember because I hadn't seen the show, you know, since it aired. So when that song came on, I remembered how raunchy it was going to be just because I had just seen the concert like a month before. But I remember watching it in the concert and being like, I didn't remember.
You were like, I was clutching my pearls during that.
Yeah, clutching my pearls.
Oh my goodness. Yes. I was getting a little embarrassed.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I do want to call attention to one of the very first scenes that we see with Catherine McPhee.
Yeah,
and
do
the
it.
The line that she says that made my blood boil.
Uh-oh, what was it?
This was within the first 5 minutes, Ebony, and you will remember it very well. Okay. So we see her in this audition. The phone rings in the middle of the audition. The person behind the table answers the phone in the middle of her singing her song. They say, shoo, shoo, thank you so much, you can go. And she leaves, and she meets up with her boyfriend at the restaurant that she works at. And he asks her how it goes, and she says something like, "Ugh, they want me to be sexy and blah, 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 but I'm not sexy. I'm the girl next door, so they don't see me and blah, blah, blah." She says the line, "Why do I have to be sexy all the time? I wish I was fat."
I don't.
Did you not hear that?
No.
Oh my gosh. It made me so mad. And like, I'm amazed because we were all watching this together in a watch party on Zoom. So like I was on camera and I grabbed my notepad and my pen and I was like scribbling furiously because it made me so angry, because that right there just again puts out into the spotlight how fat people can't be considered sexy, how fat people cannot be the love interests, how fat people have no place being anything other than the best friend or in the back.
So messed up.
It was so maddening. And I was like, did she just, so mad.
Oh, that's horrible.
And that's just it, though. We saw a lot of things in this episode that are so true to the business that are all horrible.
Yeah.
And that was just the opening line. I was amazed. I was amazed. But then in the next scene, but several scenes later, then we meet up with Megan Hilty, who is the seasoned performer. She's been in ensembles on Broadway. She has relationships with these people that are making shows and putting them on, and knows people, has connections, right? Has networked and done the work. She had an audition, didn't get called back. And so she's back in her dressing room after a performance. She takes her wig and rips it apart and throws it on the ground. I was appalled. I was appalled. First of all, because we were not allowed in the national tours that I did, we were not allowed to take off our own wigs. That was the job of the hair person.
Union.
Yes, there are very clear rules and very clear lines that you do not cross in this world, such unless you have permission. Like there were some wigs that were fine if you took them off. I had a pageboy wig that I wore in Phantom of the Opera, and I was told, yeah, that's fine. It's because it was literally like a Christine wig that they cut up because the pageboy is just supposed to be this dude. Okay. And I could take that one off myself, but none of the other ones. These are very expensive lace front. They are coiffed every night before the hair people leave. And then the next day, all leading up to the performance. So like these are the work that goes into these wigs. So she did that. And I had this like reaction, like, oh, what are you doing? But the line that was said to her was like, you know, you're going to get fined for that. And I was like, no, well, you should be freaking out right now. Because I'm freaking out right now. But it was like, yeah, I get it. You're frustrated, but don't destroy someone else's work.
No.
Goodness.
No. See, and that's the soap opera-y part of this show. We're like, that would absolutely never happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure that it would. I mean, there are some very narcissistic people in this business. And I'm sure that they have, you know, there have been people that have made very poor choices in there.
But she was like ensemble member number 5. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, your ass is in trouble if you do that.
That would be a write-up immediately. Yeah. Yeah, and it would be a fine. But that would absolutely be a write-up. That would be something that every producer and every higher up would know about. Mm-hmm. That would go in the show report. That is how important that is.
That's crazy.
Good grief. What else?
That's crazy.
Oh, you know what I will say too? Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have
No, it's okay. Go ahead. Tell me.
I just get so excited and I have my little notepad of notes. So I have to, there was a moment where she was Megan Hilty's character also, and I can't remember their actual names, so you're going to have to help me out there.
Yeah, it's all right. So Megan Hilty's Ivy Lynn.
Okay, Ivy. Mm-hmm. So Ivy was singing a demo of one of the songs that this writing team, which is Christian Borle and mm-hmm. Deborah Messing,
yeah.
who are brilliant in
they're
those
so
roles.
Fun.
They are two of my favorite characters in the whole show because they're just so perfect. But they're, you know, they wrote a song. They were going to do a demo to kind of promote it. And Ivy sings it. But you can tell that when she's rehearsing for this demo that she's singing live in the scene. And I was living for it because we don't do that anymore. Oh, sorry. My alarm's going off. We don't do that on TV anymore.
Right.
Part of my issue with anything musical theater related, as you put it on TV or in the movie, is that everything is so auto-tuned.
Right, right.
And I hate that. We've already had that discussion. Like, I want to hear the pops and the crackles and the character in your voice. And if it's auto-tuned, it's the blandest sound in the whole entire world. So there was like that moment where you're like, she's singing that live. It was very exciting.
I know Les Mis, they sang live, except for, I think, like the big scenes, because you just
And
you
Russell
just can't.
Crowe, none of his stuff was live.
That makes sense.
But yes, you are right. Now, I think that they always had a safety they recorded safety tracks in case they weren't able to capture it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I think that you're right in that like all of the solo voices were live in that moment, which was really exciting. It does. Yeah. It doesn't it make such a huge difference?
It really does. It really does.
If Anne Hathaway's character Fontaine is crying, I want to hear the snot in her sinuses.
Yeah.
There's something so much more moving about that.
It's true. I completely agree.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, for this show, like, you know, I was going to make this joke, like at the end of the pilot episode, I just wish those girls could sing, you know, it'd be so nice, you know, if they could just belt,
carry
a tone.
I wish they would just hire singers for these things.
I know.
Things.
It's just so upsetting.
So,
but that's like, no, I mean, you guys, if you've seen the pilot, you know, these girls can sing.
Yes.
But the thing is that, like, so often I'll see a musical show and I'm like, this is.
Yeah, like, what happened?
This is disappointing.
Well, it's.
Why did you choose? Why did we choose these people?
Well,
there's so many actors who can do the job.
Yes.
Well, who are not known.
There is a scene in the pilot episode of Smash that answers that question for you. They are in the casting process. Mm-hmm. They have gotten down to the callback.
Oh, my name.
Mm-hmm. And they're talking, they're going between Catherine McPhee's character and Ivy. And they're saying, and the director is very clearly saying, no, no, they don't have the power behind them. We need a name. We need butts in the seats. We need someone that's got the power.
And Derek Wills.
Yeah, thank you. Derek Wills.
That's the character's name. Oh, he's a terrible human being.
He's awful.
I mean, Christian Borle's character, Tom Levitt,
borderline.
Screams about it. Like, so, I mean, he literally screams. He's a terrible person. And it is the truth.
It's so true.
It is the absolute truth.
Ugh.
Derek is a horrifying human being.
And he's based on so many real people in this business.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. And he plays it well because
he really does.
You hate him from the start.
Yeah.
He's this stereotypical director who, and in this particular case, he's a straight director.
Yeah.
So he is chauvinistic and he's sexist and he doesn't give women their any of their own authority. He takes it away from them.
Can I point out one weird thing though?
Sure.
Okay, so he rants and raves about how we need a name. But then when Karen comes in, it's like he forgot that.
No, right? He's so enamored of this girl. Okay. There's so much to talk about.
I feel like we're like, guys, watch this show, but mostly we're freaking
out.
Right?
We're going to tell you about it. So, this made me so mad. So they have the initial auditions for the Marilyn role in mm-hmm. this show.
Mm-hmm.
And they show, and Annalee Ashford, I'm living for.
I love her so much.
So, I saw her waiting in the room and I was like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot that she was in this. And she's wearing the Gentlemen Prefer Blonde strapless pink dress.
Totally.
Looking exactly like Marilyn. She gets in there singing, I wanna be loved by you. And was like, thanked summarily and like let go and just, she's brilliant and I love her. But anyway, getting back to the point, there's going to be a lot of that, I'm sure. So we get into this, okay, right? And I'm just going to say that in an audition setting, this is a professional setting, right?
Right.
You're going
right.
in there. This is our job interview.
Right.
You dress nicely. You look the part. Whatever that is, you don't necessarily mm-hmm. want to dress up like Marilyn Monroe, but you want to give them an idea that you would fit the character if you mm-hmm. were cast that way, right?
Yeah.
So you give an illusion to it, an illusion, not an illusion, of the character, of the vintage, of the vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine McPhee, Karen?
Karen Cartwright, yeah.
Karen
Cartwright.
Karen walks in the room. Skinny black jeans and a button-up three-quarter sleeve shirt and sings a Christina Aguilera song. Okay? Mm-hmm. There is so much wrong about that. But to the director, this is such a refreshing change that he is smitten. He is taken so much by her that he disappears and it's just the two of them in the room as she's singing. And it's like the most ridiculous thing I've seen in my life. And it makes me angry.
I will say though, when I listened to the words of the song, I got why they chose it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I totally got it. I was like, it makes sense. It's refreshing to not hear somebody do another Marilyn Monroe song. Because there are some composers who get frustrated when you sing you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, she looked like a girl from Iowa.
But if you're, I know, right? If the show numbers are musical theater or jazz or big band, you don't go in and sing a heavy metal song. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm making, this is a an exaggeration on my part, but you don't sing a pop song at a Broadway musical theater audition unless it's a pop musical.
Right, which this is not going to be. And just like, it was on ULens.
Oh my God, ULens.
ULens. So she knew. She was sitting in a chair copying all the words to the song.
Yeah.
Like mimicking Ivy.
Yeah.
So she knew.
Of course she did.
Yeah.
She knew exactly. She knew exactly the kind of music that she was meant to sing or meant because that was what the show was about. But she's also meant to be this kind of like, I grew up in Iowa and I don't know anything about Broadway. I just know that I want to be a Broadway star. So I'm going to move to New York and work as a waitress. And that's how I'll get there. She'd been to like 3 auditions and was getting frustrated that it wasn't happening for her. I mean, like, this is not the way the business works. Look at Ivy for that.
Yeah,
she went to college and she trained and then she worked her way through to get a foot in the door. And she, I'm going to say a spoiler alert, has a famous mother. So it's not like she had to work for it, but she chose to.
Now, okay. I don't remember you're right. Her mom did work on Broadway, but I feel like we don't know that
until season two,
right?
Yes. We don't know that yet.
Okay.
But regardless of even knowing that or not knowing that information, like you can see that her path was essentially a meandering but straight line.
Right. And she's still, second girl from the
right
in the chorus.
Exactly. Sometimes it just works that way. Sometimes you get a Broadway debut, your first audition out, and sometimes it takes you years. And sometimes you turn 39 today and you haven't been on Broadway yet. That is just the way it works.
Yeah, it's the truth.
It was so funny. Do you know Rondi Reed? Rondi Reed. She's a big Chicago actor, but she also played Morrible on Broadway. Has done a lot of stuff. She's won Tony Awards. She's amazing, right? My dad knows her from college. Mm-hmm. And so when I first moved to New York, it was when I first moved to Chicago. I was there for like 3 or 4 months and nothing was panning out and I was getting so frustrated. And so my dad put me in touch with her just to kind of pick her brain and see, what I needed to do or if I was on the right track and whatever. And the first question that she asked me was, how long have you been trying, hon? And I said, I've been here for like 3 or 4 months. And she goes, well.
So sweet. What a sweet woman to have the patience.
Oh, totally. But I think everyone needs to hear that. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not gonna happen overnight. Maybe it will for you, and that's amazing.
Yeah.
But then it's not gonna happen again. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not. I left 2 national tours thinking I'm gonna go back to New York and I've got this resume and I'm gonna hit the ground running.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, things change so quickly in this business that if you're not around, they forget you. You could be working for them and they will forget you because you're not in the room anymore. That's what happened with me.
I watched CBS This Morning had Linda Lavin
on.
And she's adorable. Adorable. And she's 82 years old. And she said, so did you watch the 90th birthday celebration for Stephen Sondheim that happened a few months ago? Have you caught up with it yet?
I'm not sure.
It's on YouTube and it's my favorite thing that happened the entire quarantine.
Okay.
Because things got messed up so horribly at the beginning, remember?
Yes.
So she's in it and she sings a song from a musical she was in the early 70s, I think, or mid 70s. I think it was like 1976, actually. But she talks about how she got on the 90th birthday celebration and she went basically to a message board and it was like announced and she goes on the message board and she's like, or maybe it wasn't a message board, but it was the comments online. Yeah. And she commented and it says Linda Lavin. And then it says the time. And then her comments, like, it's something like, I'd like to sing such and such a song from this musical. By the way, this is Linda Lavin, right? Because she was like, nobody asked me because people think I'm dead.
Yeah.
you know, she's like, you're gone for a little while and people forget about you. So you have to remind them. That's what she said.
Yeah. It's so true. It is so true.
Yeah.
Ugh, business. Why do we choose it?
But you know, she said in the last 2 to 3 months, she'd been working more in quarantine because she's making her own stuff. She's doing her own little cabarets at home.
Nice.
She does a cabaret at home and she's Billy Stritch plays the piano for her. She's so like, fun. I've been working more in these last 2 to 3 months than I have in the last 2 to 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, and she says this when she says something that people might be shocked by in the interview. It's very cute, but she's like, and I'm not joking. I'm not lying. Yeah.
Aww. Sweet old lady.
We choose this business as crazy as it is because there is a passion and drive to tell stories.
Yeah.
And tell stories in this particular way. And it's like, we don't do it to get rich or have a ton of money. Like, there is a call to doing this work.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise you're not going to do it.
Right.
You're going to do something else. And a lot of people our age have left to do other things.
Yes, me, myself included. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's very true.
Yeah.
It's hard. It is a hard business to be in. It's a hard, because you have to continue to prove yourself every moment. Yeah. And that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work to do for free. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's very difficult.
Yep.
And now, I mean, there's been a mass exodus from New York City because Broadway is
too expensive.
And it's too expensive to live here if you're not working.
Yeah. I mean, it's too expensive to live here when you were working.
Period. Yep.
So then it's like, then you're not working. And then it's like, it's impossible.
Yeah. It's very true.
All that to say, okay, so back to the show.
Yes.
Let's talk about. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the assistant, because the assistant's the one who actually suggested they do Marilyn. And being that I have been an assistant in many different capacities, I was just like, in what world would you record?
Oh my gosh.
Their work and put that on YouTube. Like, in what world?
This makes me angry.
Would that
too.
Be okay?
Because
and you should be fired immediately. Yes.
There are no repercussions for any of the bad behavior in this show so far.
Yeah.
Like, there's just none. So this assistant, while in this demo recording situation with Ivy and the two writers, gets out his cell phone and subtly records Ivy doing this number. And
it wasn't that subtle because the phone was on the piano.
I know, right? But it was supposed to be, it was for our benefit, for the audience benefit, it was supposed to be ninja-like, right?
Yeah.
And he posts it to YouLens, which is supposed to be YouTube.
Yeah.
And it blows up. Now, the writers are incredibly angry and frustrated by it.
As they should be.
So, because now their work is out there to be criticized as well as liked. And the criticism, and I love that they made Michael Riedel part of this by calling him a Napoleonic Nazi.
Well, that's the other thing. The assistant's like, who's Michael Riedel? And I was like, you're fired! You're fired! Right. Why are you working in the theater? You're fired!
Right. Especially working in the place that you're in right now. You're working for a Broadway writer, like a composer and writer. Like, so I don't understand how you don't know just this. I mean, I know who Michael Riedel is. He's never critiqued me, but I know who he is. Like, it's so ridiculous to me. They play it off like, I'm just too young. I don't know anything about the world.
Absolutely not.
So he says that he sent an email to his mom with this video and that she uploaded it. So stupid.
Moms can't even get on Zoom without a ton of help. Please.
No, there's no, he did it. He's a big jerk, but whatever, they keep him, right? But it was ultimately his idea to do the Marilyn musical. Like he was reading the Marilyn Monroe coffee table book. And then they were starting to talk about Marilyn Monroe. The two writers were starting to talk about Marilyn Monroe. And then he was like, you should do a Marilyn musical. And they were both like, no, no, it's been done. It was panned. It was terrible. Right. No way, no way. And then they started, you know, talking about it and getting the inkling of an idea. And then as soon as Christian Borle's character said, we could do a baseball number. Then it was like, ha ha, we should do this. And then ultimately they did. This is my question.
Okay.
So Deborah Messing's character is taking a year off from writing anything. She's taking a year off because her family is wanting, her family, who is her husband, is Brian D'Arcy James, who I love. And then she's got like a teenage son as well. They're taking the year off so that they can adopt a child. Why does she have to take a year off in order to adopt a child?
Well, I mean, from like I have never adopted, but I do have friends who've been through the process. It is so much work. It's so much work.
Okay.
And so like if she, you know, like what Brian says is once she gets into doing a show, she's never home.
Yeah.
Like you get like you don't know when they're coming to your house to just inspect to see when it's up to par. You don't know exactly when you're getting a kid. You know, like my friends who adopted a little girl last summer, like they got one and didn't have all the stuff they needed. They were like, she's coming, and they had to be ready in 3 or 4 days. Like you don't know.
Okay. So I guess I didn't realize that that was, well, and that's ridiculous. So we can talk about that in another episode.
It's but wild. It
just, like, I'm just like, wait, I'm sorry. What is going, what?
It was just, if she were like only writing and not also trying to get it like produced and like turn it into a thing maybe. But like there's no possible way like you could, you know, he was right to be angry. I got it.
Well, I do understand where his anger was because they had talked about it and agreed to do some, you know, one particular thing. And now all of a sudden she's, you know, in it. But I also think it felt very much like a device to me instead of like coming from a true place. But I guess now that you've explained it, maybe that does make a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
It just really seemed like, oh, that's the excuse you came up with that she had to take a year off.
Yeah. I mean, cause then too, it's like, you know, I don't know if they had decided on which way they're going. Are they going with an adoption agency or are they going to go with a lawyer? If they're going to go with a lawyer, then they have to do more work on that, you know, themselves. It's it's like so arduous, but I mean, ultimately worth it. So many kids need good homes.
Oh, but, totally.
But yeah, it's, I probably would have said the same, but it's just because I have some friends who've been through the process.
No, that makes more sense. Thanks for explaining that.
No problem.
I was like, I don't know. Don't you just go to the baby store?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com.
I know it's not as easy as that. I know. I'm not such an idiot.
That was a joke, though. We know. It was funny.
Then we were just talking about Michael Riedel, and they made the comment. Deborah made the comment. She was like, this made me so laugh, and I wish that I had written it out all, but then I would have missed some other stuff that was happening. But she said something like, you know, Michael Riedel panned Spider-Man before anyone even got named. And it made me laugh out loud.
Named, yeah. Because we did that whole two-part, and that was pretty great. That was a great line. Before anyone got maimed.
Oh, Lordy.
The show's so unfortunate, show.
Well, and I do like, though, that they were making popular culture references, but popular culture to Broadway.
So, yeah, like, it's wonderful.
You really do have to know the business in order to get some of the stuff that was coming at you, which was fun. It was kind of like little Easter eggs, you know what
it's
I mean?
So, fun. Yeah.
I will say one other thing that I found just delightful was there's this scene that Ivy is on the phone in her kitchen talking to her mother.
Yes.
It's the tiniest little kitchen. It's got a stove, a tiny little countertop, and then a sink. And I thought that is the most accurate representation of a New York City apartment I have ever seen in any TV show or movie in my life.
It's true.
And I was living for it because that people get this, these expectations of what a New York lifestyle
is. It's friends' fault. It's because of friends.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That because of friends and Will and Grace. Yeah. Deborah Messing, I'm looking at you again because that apartment's not realistic.
He was a lawyer, so it might have worked that way that he was able to afford that apartment. Maybe it was a co-op that he bought.
I mean, because like the terrace. Really?
Well, listen, the friend's apartment was no, because that apartment would have gone for like $6,000 a month easy.
At least. Yeah.
At least. And so there's no way that those friends are paying for that apartment. No.
Nope.
No. But anyway, but this particular, I was like, yes, that looks like my kitchen. I know this. I know this apartment and it's real. And it's like, it made me think like, I wonder who on the cast, they were like, can we just film in your apartment? It was so realistic. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the best one. Cause Tom's and, oh gosh, what's Deborah's name on the show? Let me see.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not using their names at all. I need to write a key.
Here we go. Tom and Julia.
Julia.
Their apartments were not realistic.
No. What is
I mean,
Brian's
Tom had.
Well, I wonder
a
though.
A foyer.
I know.
He had a grand piano. He had a huge living room, kitchen, office. Nuh-uh.
No.
Nuh-uh. Not it. No. No.
But
you're
I also
living.
Wonder, like maybe they're living in like Maplewood. New Jersey.
No, it was the city because remember when, okay. So remember when the assistant comes back and is sitting on the porch?
Yes.
Or not the porch, but the steps.
Yeah. It was clearly like an Upper West Side apartment building.
Yeah. But that's still, that's not.
And then, yeah, no, they're
not for what he's making. You don't get rich off of musicals.
And like,
unless it's Hamilton or DH.
No, absolutely. You're right. You are so right. But then also, like, look at Derek, the director's character, like his apartment that he was just like living in temporarily while he was in America was like this industrial warehouse, gorgeous apartment.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I would do with all that space.
I mean, so unrealistic.
So completely unrealistic.
Okay, so let's talk about that scene because that.
Okay, so this is because that's the last note that I wrote and I knew we were going to come to it and I just needed to prepare myself. So we got all the fun stuff out of the way. So this, when I had mentioned earlier that there's a lot of stuff that happens in this that is based on real life people and real life events that have happened in this business. I am speaking specifically about the character of Derek, the director, who I've already said is a chauvinist. He's a narcissist. He is a sexist.
Yeah.
And he's disgusting.
Yeah.
He uses people. He manipulates them. And I'm speaking specifically about young, attractive women who are dependent on him for a job.
Yeah.
Uses them and manipulates them into doing whatever he wants them to do just at the prospect of being cast in one of his shows.
Yeah.
And it's disgusting.
It's awful. I mean, this is, you know, I've mentioned this two other times this week, but, you know, Michael Kilgore in his, you know, video manifesto, as it were, he said, you know, there's a lot of theater people who haven't been outed for what they've done and it's going to come out. And, you know, in this episode, while nothing happened, happened to her. What did happen to her is like mentally, it was like mental abuse. Yeah. You know, she
is at her apartment with her boyfriend. She's working on her scene for the next day's callback.
Yeah.
And out of the blue gets a text message from Derek, the director, saying, I'm assuming, come on over and we'll work on the scene together.
Yeah.
So she puts on some clothes and she hops on the subway and she goes to his apartment where he berates her and makes her feel like less than nothing.
Yeah.
Asks her, oh yeah, you were working on the scene. What were you doing? Mm-hmm. And she was embarrassed by this question because what she was doing was very private.
Yeah.
And she said something like, I was working on Some Like It Hot. And so he said, show me, in a gross, creepy, lecherous way.
Yep.
And she freaks out. You can see the panic and the embarrassment, but also that thought in the back of her mind, like, if I mess this up, I'm done in this business. And I've already proven to my parents that I can't succeed. Mm-hmm. So she runs to the bathroom and she's crying. Mm-hmm. And then in this moment, she kind of lifts her head up and her eyes are full of tears, but she decides, okay, in for a penny, in for a pound. And she goes out there wearing his, nothing but his button up white shirt and sings Happy Birthday, Mr. President. And then at the end, now this is where I love it. Because at the end, she goes, not gonna happen, and gets her butt out of there.
Yeah.
And I was thinking the whole time, I was like, please, 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 just get out, get out, get out. Just get out of there.
Run like the wind, Karen.
Because she's lucky.
Yeah,
There are too many stories about girls that have been
taken
advantage
of. That's
not how it ends. No. Yeah. There are too many stories. And they have not come to light. Because out of embarrassment, because they need to save their career, because, you know, whatever it is.
Afraid of repercussions.
Repercussions. Well, we look
and unfortunately,
at
these men are still in power.
Yes.
Goodness.
Harvey Weinstein is the one that everyone knows about right now because he was put out there. This was the Me Too movement. All of these actresses, these Hollywood A-list actresses came out and finally said, he raped me. He, you know, manipulated me. He made me feel this way. This is what he did. This is his casting couch. And it'd been happening for decades.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it is the nature of this business. And I think for a long time, much like sexual harassment, you just kind of took it in stride. Do you know what I mean? Like, even I felt this way when I was first in the business. It's like, you know, we tap each other on the butt and we talk to each other that way. And like, it's just a very physical place where, you know, you have to become very intimate with people very quickly to be able to do theater. And so like, yeah, these are just the normal things. But even like, even hearing myself say that right now makes me feel a little bit icky because I did feel that way. Like at one time in my professional life, I thought this was an okay behavior. And as I get older, I really understand that it is not.
Yeah.
That nobody gets to touch me unless I want them to.
It's another
gets to talk to me that way.
It's another part of the white patriarchy that we are dismantling, right? Like this is another piece of it that still has a lot of reckoning that has to be done because what has been happening for so many generations is like, you know, white men have been on top. And so they've suppressed everyone else.
Yeah.
Everyone else. So women, no matter what racial background they come from, they've all been suppressed. LGBTQ plus, because it's mostly straight, cisgendered white men. And so, you know, this is another huge, you know, we have the Me Too movement, we have Time's Up, but there's so many who are still working, who are still operating in this fashion, who have their reckoning is coming, but hasn't come yet. And it's just, it needs to happen soon because there are people whose lives are being destroyed. There are very talented people who have left the business because of the ways that they've been treated, the ways in which they've been assaulted and the ways in which, they've been manipulated. And I think that
or people that have left the business before even starting because they were unwilling to put up with the treatment.
That's right. And they were ostracized or blacklisted because they were unwilling to do so. And so, I mean, you know, that scene, I remember feeling like pissed off when I watched it, but it's just like a whole other level when I hear just so many of the stories coming out. Not that like I don't have my own Me Too, you know, moments.
Sure. I think we all do.
We all do. Yeah, I mean, that was like, oh.
I know.
Super frustrating. And something that needs to be dealt with on a happier note.
Yeah.
Can we please talk about the ending of the episode?
Yes.
Because it's so corny, but I still get chills watching it. Don't hate me.
It's a good number.
Yeah.
It really is. All I will say that I do remember liking all of the musical numbers that were introduced in this show. They're all really well written. But this particular, what's the, Let Me Be Your Star is the name of the song, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Start off with Catherine McPhee's character singing, and she's just getting ready for the callback. And then you skip to Ivy's character, and who is also getting ready for the callback, and she sings her part of it. And then they come together, and the voices together are just beautiful. And it's like, it is a really stirring moment. But I think, you know, you and I, and anybody that grew up loving musical theater, those are the numbers that we love so much and that make us feel. They stir our hearts. They make us want to see and sing musical theater. Like, those are the numbers. You know, and in every show, there is at least one of those numbers. And everyone knows every single word of those numbers.
It's true.
They're great. They're so good.
Yep.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I was goosebumpy as well.
And those two ladies can sing so well. Oh, man.
You know what? Their acting is impeccable, too. Impeccable.
For Catherine being so green.
Completely. And I think, and she was the one that was even most moving to me, too, because especially in the scene where she's in director's apartment. I don't even want to use his name anymore. He's just gross. You can see everything written right there on her face. And it's so brilliantly acted because it's not like in your face. It is all of the subtext going through her mind.
Yeah.
And it's so good. She's really good. I think across the board, there's not a single actor that I don't like in this show.
Yeah,
so far.
No, they're all great. I mean,
they're all really good.
I don't know if Angelica Houston's entrance.
I know.
I was like, okay, I remember watching this and being like, I want to be her when I grow up, minus the divorce. Like, I don't want to go through any of that.
Yeah.
But just like, I mean, she is going to do what she wants to do. And even if her,
yes.
The skin of her teeth, her nails digging in, she will get the show produced. And it's just like that one pilot episode, I remembered her whole arc and like her as a woman fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Like all these men in power to try to get this show about a woman who was, you know, looked down upon and treated as an object and not as a human being, you know, just fought tooth and nail for the 2 years to get that show produced, like almost went bankrupt, almost was homeless to try to get it up. And I just was like, I remember watching and, you know, I don't know that I want to be that close to bankruptcy or in trouble or anything, you know, but just like that tenacity.
Yeah. Like that, it's not desperation because it's much more assertive than that.
Yeah, totally.
It's just the importance of it. There is a passion behind it.
Yeah.
It's good. That's good stuff. Yeah,
I love it.
Have we missed anybody?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
The son didn't really have a big part this episode. Like, he will eventually.
No. Yeah.
The husband, her ex, hasn't had a big part yet, but he's going to be another piece of garbage man.
Yeah.
And Karen's boyfriend...
Dev. I didn't remember his name. I don't know why I remember his name and nobody else's.
He has later on in the season, he has a great like Bollywood. They have a great Bollywood.
I love Bollywood.
Yeah.
It is a guilty pleasure for me because it's so, it's just the other side of the coin to musical theater as follows, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I love it. It is over theatricized. It is amazing. And I love the dancing. And like, there's always hundreds of people involved in big Bollywood numbers. I love Bollywood.
So that's later on. That should be fun.
That will be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always nervous now. Cause I'm like, I remember in 2011, it was fun, but like, is it racist now? I won't know until I see. You know what I mean?
Lord, yes,
that's
I
why
do.
I'm like hesitant. I'm like, it could be great. It could be terrible. I don't know because I haven't seen it in a few years.
Well, let's just say, because I think what we remember it being can be the same as what we remember, but we can always come back and say, okay, listen, so I've changed my mind. We're always allowed to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're always allowed to do that. There's a lot of stuff that I've gone back and watched and been like, oh, that's problematic. And, you know, and it's not just the 9 years ago. It's, you know, going back several decades.
Yeah.
Well, even the first line that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
Like, why do I have
I don't
to
even remember. I don't I remember I that. I'm so angry about that line.
It's when she first sits down at the table with Dev at the restaurant that she works at. And that's what she says. It's ridiculous. I mean, it was just like, what? So that was problematic. In my real life, I actually have a tank top that I pulled out of the closet to wear. This was a couple weeks ago. And it's got a colorful picture of an owl.
Yeah.
But what I didn't realize is that the owl is wearing a Native American headdress and it says, be brave.
Oh, no.
So I took it out and I went, I can't wear that anymore.
No.
And I threw it to the side and I was like, but I even like went, is this appropriate? And I was like, it's not appropriate.
No.
It's not anymore. And that's just the nature of what we're going through right now.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, this was a very easy change to make.
I'll just Marie Kondo that right
now. I know,
away.
Right? Well, I'm just going to throw that in the garbage can, actually, because nobody needs to be wearing that.
No.
But it literally was like, I never would have thought about that, except now it's in my consciousness, which is what this whole movement is about. And I think watching back episodes of stuff like this, seeing where the problems are, helps us to make better decisions now.
Yeah.
That's why history is so important.
It's true. It's true.
And learning the real history. And not just the making peanut butter part of it.
Making peanut butter part.
Okay, because I just heard a story. So George,
I've never heard of that though. I've never even heard that saying.
Okay, well, I just made it up. So we were taught that George Washington Carver invented peanut butter, but he did so much more. Like
he
basically fed all of his black and other people of color in his area, like in his area, he fed them. He kept them fed. And when my people decided they were no longer going to, oh, you're not going to be our slave anymore. Well, I guess you're cut off for good then, right? So then these people were starving. George stepped in and was like, well, I'm taking care of my people and did that. We know him because he invented peanut butter, which he didn't even do.
Right. No, he didn't.
That was, I mean, I had only just heard that. And that was because of TikTok. Ebony, I'm learning so much on TikTok. That should be, I mean, that's illegal. That should be illegal. Like that, something like that.
It's messed up.
Because I remember learning that in school.
Right. Well, we have to remember, though, who writes the history books, right?
Yes.
White and that's why we don't know.
Want to keep their power.
Right. Right. I saw, well, I did see it as a, like a meme, but also my therapist said this to me. Hmm. I love my therapist. I mean, she's a black woman. So it's like when I'm and she loves Jesus.
Yeah.
But she said, white people really know that we're special and that we have incredible power. And she's like, and this is why the society wants to hold us back, because the moment we realize we have the creativity, the power, the strength, everything that God has put within us,
yes,
then we will excel and they're going to be pissed off. Yep. They know that.
I'm getting a little bit of a quickening in my chest. It's so good because it's so good.
Yeah.
I felt that way for a long time about being a woman. And if women were given just an opportunity to show what we are truly capable of, mm-hmm. that we would be much more a part of the decisions that are being made. So it is every marginalized group of people.
Yep.
If we were allowed to show our potential, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. we would overtake the people that have been oppressing us.
Yep. That's right. That's right. I remember having this discussion with my roommate and we had this discussion and then started saying, you know, I said, Megan, we just need to have the confidence of mediocre white men. And then I was like, wait a minute, that's like a t-shirt, or I think that's on a friend's bag or something. And so then like a few days later, I went to Italy with my friend Kaylee.
Yeah.
And the last day we're in Rome and she pulls out her bag and is walking around and it says, carry yourself with the confidence of a mediocre white man. And I said, it was you at the bag. That's where I saw
amazing.
It.
That's amazing.
So I had to take a picture and send it to Megan because I was like, that's where I'd seen it.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. That is brilliant. And I love it. Well, and here's the part of it that makes me so angry is that the people, and I'll just call them the people in charge because that's essentially what they are.
Yeah.
The people in charge think that by giving other people power, by giving the marginalized their due, that they are then going to end up as oppressed as the marginalized people that they have put there, right?
Right.
But that's not actually the case.
No.
Because the people that would come into their own power would never put another human being in a position to feel oppressed or marginalized.
Right.
But that's the thinking. They don't want to be in a position that they are putting other people.
Right. Well, and I think the other piece of that, though, is like when that's how your brain works, to oppress other people so that you can be on top. Of course, you're going to think like other people are going to do that to you because that's how you operate.
So you think of others, what you are capable of yourself.
That's right. So like the notion of equity like doesn't register because it's like, no, that's not what's going to happen. They're going to try to oppress us. And that's why you have like white supremacists walking around saying things I won't repeat about other people groups because they don't want to be replaced.
Yeah.
I mean, listen.
Maybe they need to be replaced at this point.
If you're thinking like that, you do need to be replaced.
Yes.
If you're going to be an accomplice and an ally, then you can walk with us and be in an equitable society where there's room for everyone to be successful.
Yes. There's this great graphic that I've seen. You've probably seen this as well, but there's three people all trying to look over the fence. And it shows the difference between equality and equity. Mm-hmm. And in equality, they all get a tree stump to stand on. But you've got a really tall person that could already see over the fence. And then you've got a medium-sized person who can now see over the fence. And then you've got a really short person that even with the help can't see over the fence. Mm-hmm. But then in equity, you give one tree stump to the medium-sized guy and two tree stumps to the short guy. And suddenly now everybody can see over the fence. Mm-hmm. So it's not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
That's all we're asking.
Yeah.
If you don't need a tree stump, don't take one from someone who needs two.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
It seems simple. I'm like,
it
these memes seem so simple, but people still are just like not. Mm. Oh, man. I don't even know. How do we even get
like
on
like,
this? I don't even remember. I know we were talking about the show.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Learning. Oh, you were watching past episodes and not really remembering whether or not they were problematic.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
But so we hope you guys enjoyed this new format that we're taking this season.
Yeah, we're gonna do this for the. I think it's a total of 34 episodes.
It could be that we double up some, who knows?
Yeah, we don't know. But we are going to do all of them.
Yeah.
And, I hope that you join us for the ride. It's who knows how long we might be closed down again. Nobody knows what's going on because the numbers are going up. So listen, you might have plenty of time to binge watch. NBC is free. Theater's not opening until God only knows when.
I was talking to my mom about that. On that note, I do want to say,
be an arts hero.
Yeah.
Guys, call your congresspeople. Follow Be an Arts Hero on Instagram. We got to help our people out. It's rough.
Please. You were asking, I'm not asking for it. The Broadway community and the people that have been affected by this the most are asking for that continued $600 per month along with their unemployment insurance because they cannot work right now.
Yeah.
Their job and also now their backup job are both the kind of jobs that do not, are not essential. So we need to be able to take care of our people because arts is incredibly important in this society. And if it disappears completely, we are not anything that we should be. Remember the fall of the Roman Empire? Let's just remember that.
I bet. And if you don't know, guys, Google it. I mean, come on. One last thing I will say too is I saw Billy Porter on MSNBC. He did Morning Joe because he's one of the founders of Be an Arts Hero.
Yeah.
And so he was giving some statistics that were really, really startling. Most of them I knew, but the worst one that has just messed me up since I saw it was he said 12,000 arts institutions have already said they know they won't, there's no possible way they'll return after the pandemic.
Oh, that's such a shame. 12,000?
12,000. And that was just as of a few days ago. The way things are going, that number will probably go up.
Well, and let's be honest, at this point, I think, we're talking about this before. I'm skeptical by nature for some reason. Yeah. And I almost want to say that even spring of 2021 is maybe being a little bit too optimistic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about, in March, Fauci said 18 to 24 months for there to be a vaccine, and it's just the economics of Broadway just don't work to only have 27% of the audience in the theater. So, and then you've got a lot of anti-maskers, you've got anti-vaxxers. Well, I don't know what we're going to do.
You've got people like me that will not feel comfortable going into any establishment with more than a handful of people until there's a vaccine.
Right. Well, and that's why I said even with anti-vaxxers, because you have so it's just support the arts, guys.
Please. Well, and
follow hashtag save the arts as well. Follow that.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's important.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for listening.
Yes.
We're excited to be with you next week about episode 2. Watch on the NBC.com app and follow along with us.
Please.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway, Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.